but she worked willingly in the Maw installation, and she had admitted her role in a matter-of-fact way. "What's a nice girl like you doing in a place like this?" he finally said.
"This is what I do. This is what I'm best at."
Kwai nodded her head absently, as if considering her answer.
"Here I have a chance to grapple with the greatest mysteries of the cosmos. To solve problems that others have claimed are unsolvable. To see my wild ideas take shape. It's very thrilling."
Han could still not understand. "But how did this happen to you? Why are you here?"
"Oh, that," Kwai said, as if suddenly understanding the question. "My home planet was Amwat, in the Outer Rim. Moff Tarkin took 10 young Amwati children from various cities. He placed us in intense forced education camps, trying to mold us into great designers and problem solvers. I was the best. I was the only one who made it through all the training. I was his prize, and he sent me here as a reward. At first I worked with Bevel Lemelisk to bring the Death Star to fruition. When we had the blueprints completed, Tarkin took Bevel away, leaving me to create newer and better concepts."
"Okay," Han said. "So I'll ask you again. Why do you do this stuff?" Kwai looked at him as if he had suddenly grown stupid.
"It's the most interesting thing I can imagine. I have my pick of the challenges, and I'm usually successful. What more could I want?"
Han knew he wasn't getting through. "How can you enjoy working on things like this? It's horrible." Kwai took another step backward, looking baffled and hurt.
"What do you mean by that? It's fascinating work, if you think about it. One of our concepts was to modify existing molecular furnace devices into autonomous world devastators that could strip raw materials from a planet's surface, feed it into huge automated onboard factories, and produce useful machines. We're quite proud of that idea. We transmitted the proposal off to Tarkin shortly after he took Bevel with him."
Her voice trailed off.
"I wonder whatever happened to that idea."
Han blinked in astonishment. The terrifying fleet of world devastators had attacked Admiral Akbar's home planet, laying waste part of the beautiful water world before the juggernauts were destroyed.
"The world devastators have already been built," Han mumbled, "and put to very efficient use."
Kwai's face lit up.
"Oh, that's wonderful."
"No, it isn't," he shouted into her face. She sprang back. "Don't you know what your inventions are used for? Do you have any idea?"
Kwai backed off, straightening up again defensively.
"Yes, of course. The Death Star was to be used to break up dead planets to allow direct mining of the heavy metals trapped in the core. The world devastators would be autonomous factories combing asteroids or sterile worlds to produce a wide range of items without polluting inhabited planets."
Han snorted and rolled his eyes.
"If you believe that, you'll believe anything. Listen to their names. Death Star, World Devastator. That doesn't sound like something for peacetime economic development, does it?"
Kwai scowled and turned her back on it.
"Oh, what difference does it make?"
"The Death Star's first target was the planet Alderaan, my wife's home world. It murdered billions of innocent people. The world devastators were turned loose on the inhabited world of Calamari. Hundreds of thousands of people died. Those efficient factories of yours manufactured TIE fighters and other weapons of destruction. Nothing else."
"I don't believe you."
Her voice did not sound confident.
"I was there. I flew through the rubble of Alderaan. I saw the devastation on Calamari. Didn't you read about it in my interrogation report? Admiral Dalla pressed me over and over again for those details."
Kwai crossed her slender bluish arms over her chest.
"No, that wasn't in your debriefing summary, which you so melodramatically call an interrogation."
"Then you didn't get the whole report," Han said.
"Nonsense. I'm entitled to all data."
She stared at her feet.
"Besides, I only developed the concepts. I make them work. If someone on the outside abuses my inventions, I can't be held responsible. That's beyond the scope of what I do."
Han made a noncommittal sound, simmering with anger. Her words sounded rehearsed, like something that had been drilled into her. She didn't even seem to think about what she was saying.
Kwai flitted back to her 3D display panel, tapping on the musical keys and humming to sharpen the long, angular image she had been constructing when Han opened his eyes. "Would you like to see what I'm working on now?" Kwai asked, studiously avoiding any mention of the previous discussion. "Sure," Han said, afraid that when she no longer needed to talk to him, Kwai would send him back to his detention cell. She gestured to the image of the small craft. Four-sided and elongated, it looked like the long shard of a fire-facet gem. From the diagram, he could see a pilot's compartment with space enough for 6 people. Small lasers studded strategic areas. The bottom of the long point carried a strange toroidal transmitting dish. "Right now we're working on enhancing the armor," Kwai said. "Though the craft is not much larger than a single-man fighter, we need it to be completely impervious to attack. By introducing quantum crystalline armor, where only a few layers of atoms are stacked as densely as physics permits, laminated on top of another thin film, just as tough, but phase-shifted, we can be confident that nothing will harm it, not so much as a dent." Han nodded to the laser emplacements. He couldn't see well from his vantage, chained against a support pillar. "Then why add the weaponry if the ship is indestructible?" He had visions of a fleet of these things replacing the TIE fighters. A small force of indestructible assault craft could fly into any New Republic fleet and carve the ships up at their leisure. "This craft is highly maneuverable and small enough not to be noticed on a system-wide scan, but they still might encounter some resistance. Remember, the Death Star was the size of a small moon. This accomplishes, through finesse, what the Death Star brought about through brute force." With a cold fear inside, Han did not want to know the answer to his next question. How could she compare this small ship to the Death Star? But he couldn't stop himself from asking, "And what is it? What does it do?" Kwai looked at the image with awe, pride, and fear. "Well, we haven't actually tested it yet, but the first full-scale model is basically completed. We call this concept the Sun Crusher. Tiny, but immensely powerful. One small impervious craft launches a modulated resonance projectile into a star, which triggers a chain reaction in the core, igniting a supernova even in low-mass stars. Straightforward and simple." In his horror, Han could think of nothing to say. The Death Star destroyed planets, but the Sun Crusher could destroy whole solar systems. 22. Luke and Lando stood with Maruth Duel high inside one of Kessel's atmosphere stacks. They held the rusted guard railing at the edge of a catwalk, staring down the dizzying drop. Leaning into the stack, they breathed the manufactured air boiling into the sky. It reminded Luke of the great air shaft in Cloud City. Duel shouted into the roaring background noise,
"According to one old Imperial study, there's only enough raw material in Kessel's crust to keep the atmosphere in equilibrium for a century or two at our present rate of consumption."
He shrugged, hunching his bumpy shoulders in a sort of seizure.
"A few years ago, the output was higher so that the slaves could walk around and breathe the air. But what's the point in allowing that?"
Lando nodded sagely, as if still interested, while Luke said nothing. Duel had been their tour guide for an entire day, talking more than even the long-winded senators on Coruscant. Duel wanted Lando's 500,000 credits and went about extolling Kessel's virtues like a representative from the Planetary Chamber of Commerce. Wherever Duel took them, Luke strained his Jedi senses, reaching out to find some sign of Han or Chewbacca. But Luke could feel no tickle in the Force, no ripple of his friend's presence. Perhaps they were truly dead after all. Lando continued his conversation with Duel, shouting into the rushing wind that rose through the stack.
"A lot can change around here by the time the air runs out. What matters is what you accomplish during your own lifetime."
Duel's hissing laugh was swallowed by background noise. He reached up to lay a hand on Lando's shoulder.
"We think alike, Mr. Timo. Who cares what happens after we're space dust? I'd rather squeeze Kessel dry while I've got it in my fist."
"You seem to have an enormous operation. Why are you still running it solo?"
Lando asked. Duel flinched at the term solo, and Luke knew Lando had chosen his word carefully. Both of them caught the Rybet's reaction.
"What do you mean?"
Duel asked.
Well, when the Imperial confiscation of spice ended, I would have thought you'd open all your markets, get 1,000 representatives to spread the product. Jabba the Hutt is dead. Why didn't you link up with the unified smugglers under Talon Card or Mara Jade? That must have hurt your profits.
Duel pointed one gummy-ended finger at Lando.
Our profits are growing enormously now that we get all the glitter stim rather than just what we can steal from under Imperial noses. And after being so long under the yoke of the Empire, I didn't want to get into the same position with the New Republic. Everybody knows that Jade and Card are just puppets.
Seeing Lando's skepticism, Duel waved his hands.
Oh, but we are considering it, of course. In fact, I've already spoken with a minister from the New Republic, opening up a line of communication that may eventually lead to an alliance.
Sounds like good news, Lando said in a noncommittal voice.
Duel led them back along the catwalk to the access doorway where R2 waited. Shutting the heavy door behind them, Duel paused a moment for their ears to adjust to the sudden silence.
As you can see, a great deal is changing around here. You, my friend, have chosen a good time to join in.
If I decide to invest, Lando said firmly.
Yes, yes, if you decide to invest. The truth is, this could be even more important, Mr. Timo. Since the death of Skink's Necks, I'll be needing a new, assistant for running the spice mines.
Lando fluffed the cape behind him in a self-important gesture.
If I'm investing $500,000 credits, Duel, I'd expect to be more of a partner than an assistant.
Duel practically kowtowed.
Of course, trivial details can be worked out. I'll also need a new shift boss. Maybe your companion here would be interested in the work?
He looked at Luke, squinting with his egg-white eye. Luke met the Rybat's mechanical eye and stared into the focus-changing lenses, trying to pry some secrets from Duel's brain. Luke said,
I'll have to think about it.
Duel ignored him, focusing his attention back on Lando.
Now then, you've seen practically everything. Is there anything else I can show you?
Lando looked to Luke, who pondered a moment. Thoughts of the Jagged Moon and its security base kept troubling him. If Han was not on Kessel itself, perhaps he was imprisoned on the moon base.
Aren't you worried about attack from remnants of the Empire? Luke asked. Or consolidation forces from the New Republic?
Duel brushed aside the comment.
We have our own defenses. Don't worry.
But Luke persisted, trying to sound like a cautious business associate.
If we're going to invest, we should see these alleged defenses. We know about the energy shield left by the Imperial Correction Facility. But do you have a fleet of any sort?
Duel began to sputter, but Lando took charge.
Maruth, if there's something you don't want us to see...
No, no, it's no trouble at all. I'll just have to arrange a shuttle up to the moon base. I don't want you to think we have anything to hide.
Duel bustled off to arrange for the shuttle, leaving Luke and Lando to exchange skeptical glances. Lando did not like the idea of leaving the Lady Luck behind on the landing pad of the Imperial Correction Facility, but Duel continued to play the gracious host. Luke silently tried to console him as they lifted off in the short-range shuttle, but Lando kept looking out the small window as if he would never see his ship again. Kessel's moon approached, looking like a hollowed sphere with most of the rock scooped out to house a large internal hangar and the enormous generators and transmitters that created the protective energy shield surrounding the planet. After they landed, Maruth Duel strutted out of the shuttle, gesturing them to follow with an impatience that made Luke curious. Duel stood waiting for them as R2 worked his way down the ramp and into the giant grotto. Behind a transparent atmosphere containment screen, Luke could see stars and the trailing wisps of gas looping around the black hole cluster. Duel seemed prouder of his defensive fleet than he was of any other aspect of the Kessel operations.
Follow me.
He waddled across the rock floor of the hangar bay, leading them along rows and rows of fighter craft arranged in seemingly random order. They passed ships Luke found familiar, and others so exotic he could not even identify them. He called on his knowledge as a fighter pilot to assess the fleet. X-wings, Y-wings, powerful Corellian corvettes, a single B-wing, TIE fighters, TIE interceptors, 4 TIE bombers, several skip-ray blast boats, gamma-class assault shuttles.
In space, like prizes around the ragged opening of the moon, hovered larger attack ships. 3 Carrick cruisers, 2 big Lancer frigates, a single Lorinar strike cruiser.
After we drove out the Empire, Duhl said, I placed the highest priority on a defensive fleet. I bought every fighter I could find, no matter what its condition, and hired experienced mechanics from the Corellian sector of Nar Shaddaa.
He grinned with his amphibian lips.
We just got the energy shield operational again 2 days ago. I can heave a big sigh of relief now. With the shields finally up and our new fleet as a backup, Kessel is safe and independent. We can set Glitterstim prices across the galaxy without interference from anybody.
Sure is a lot of ships, Lando agreed. I'm impressed. Luke recalled how much trouble the New Republic had obtaining sufficient fighting ships during Admiral Thrawn's guerrilla campaigns. If Maruth Duhl had been pulling all the strings he could to obtain every functional ship in the sector, no wonder supplies had been so limited.
We should be able to defend against spice pirates, don't you think?
Duhl said. They kept walking along the rows of parked ships. Suddenly Lando froze, and Luke felt a surge of shocked emotion from him. R2 began chittering wildly. Luke looked around until he saw one modified light freighter of Corellian manufacture, a ship that looked decidedly familiar.
What is it?
Duhl asked, looking down at the droid. Lando took a moment to regain his composure. He rapped his knuckles on R2's top dome.
Stray cosmic ray, I suppose. Occasionally these old astromech units frazzle a circuit.
He swallowed. Can I speak with my assistant for a moment in private, Maruth?
Of course.
Duhl discreetly backed away.
I'll go make sure the mechanics are prepping the shuttle for our return to Kessel.
He turned to Luke and forced humor into his tone.
Now don't go talking your boss out of making an investment here.
The moment Duhl moved out of earshot, Lando nodded excitedly to the freighter.
That's the Falcon, Luke. I know her like a Kravix knows its shell.
Luke looked at the ship, recognizing it himself but wanting more proof.
You positive? It's the Falcon, Luke. I owned her, remember, before Han stole her from me in a Sabacc game. If you look, you can see the streaking scar on top where I knocked off the subspace antenna dish trying to zip away from the Death Star.
Luke also noticed scorch marks from a recent space combat.